It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What is up, sports fans? Welcome back to another episode of the NFL Whip Around. Quick call to action for those of you that are watching on YouTube. Be sure to like and subscribe to our channel so you get all the latest updates on the National Football League, as well as Coach Kevin Smith's breakdowns of all the players entering the NFL draft, as well as a lot more. And if you're listening to this in audio form on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, give us a five-star rating. It does help. I'm Jeff Hartman, joined by Coach KT Smith. What's up, Coach? How's it going?
What's up? Doing great. All right, 2 weeks away, a little more than 2 weeks to go. So everybody's getting all sharpened up. I can't wait.
Are you like me where you're just like, oh my gosh, is it draft time yet? Like it feels like now, like we are just at the lull of it all. Like there's an excitement and it's working its way to a fever pitch, but man, we're still 2 weeks away. Like this is kind of exhausting, isn't it?
It is, because you have too much time. You start to kind of go down the rabbit hole of thoughts. And yeah, I read an article in which a guy the other day put up a 2025 mock draft. I was like, okay, we've got way too much time on our hands, dude. We're 2 weeks away from the 2024 draft.
Now, let me ask you, as a coach, this is not one of the topics. This is just me spitballing here. As a coach, if you're preparing, and this doesn't mean like the head coach, it could be a positional coach, doesn't matter. You're preparing for the draft. You're looking at these prospects. You're watching the film. You're breaking it down. At what point do you say, okay, I've seen enough? Like we went to the combine, we talked to him, maybe he was at the Senior Bowl or the Shrine Bowl, we've gone to his pro day. Don't you feel like that at some point you can overanalyze some of this stuff?
Oh, I agree. I think you create this paralysis by analysis and you begin to sort of second guess yourself. A rule I learned a long time ago, and I have to remind myself to stick to it, is first thought, best thought. That you oftentimes your first impression of a thing is the best impression. And then once you start begin to, you know, really dive into it and overly question, you can make mistakes. And I wish as a teacher, I had kept track of the number of times that my students on tests had penciled in one answer, then erased it and gone to a second answer. I would be willing to guess that the accuracy rate when they go to that second answer is probably 20%. They always change the right one to the wrong one. And yeah, I think that can happen when you're evaluating prospects as well. You know, so I think teams have to trust their instincts, trust their initial impressions. And now they're probably doing things like preparing for these, you know, scenarios that aren't likely to happen, but they want to be prepared for them. Like if a top level prospect falls to them that they weren't expecting to, you know, what do you do then, et cetera.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Let's start this NFL Whip Around podcast. We do five topics and a player profile at the very end. And what better way to start than with a polarizing character like Orenthal James Simpson? That's O.J. Simpson. For those that don't know, O.J. Simpson has a very sordid past. He has an NFL legacy, which is tarnished, obviously, with off-field issues. But he did have an NFL legacy as one of the greatest running backs of all time prior to the off-the-field issues. He passed away of cancer. I think I heard prostate cancer was the cancer that actually killed him. But we're not here to talk about the off-field stuff. I think that let's talk about this on a more grander scale. What's your biggest takeaway on the entire O.J. Simpson drama and how it impacted the United States?
It's interesting because, again, I teach high school juniors and seniors. Many of those kids, O.J. doesn't resonate with them. They may have seen a little bit of a documentary or so, but they don't remember O.J. Simpson the way that you and I do. People who are around our age obviously have a much more complicated remembrance of O.J. Simpson. I think if the question is sort of the big picture of what was his impact really on American culture, for me, the whole O.J. saga was the birth of reality television. And it was really the beginning of this voyeurism that we've acquired into other people's lives on a seemingly endless basis. I mean, the O.J. trial was coinciding really with the explosion of cable news. And I remember CNN basically covered it 24/7. And that launched a whole sort of subculture of television shows, court-related dramas, crime TV. Now, if you go on Netflix or you go on any streaming service, there's like 50 shows devoted to just like crime and murder and real life killers and all that stuff. None of that existed before OJ. The country became so enthralled with it for lots of reasons that it sort of spawned its own subculture. For me, that's the thing I'll never really sort of forget about OJ, was how OJ became the precursor to this voyeuristic nature that we now have.
That's a great point. I never even thought of it that way. For I think a lot of people, and even people that are my age, I'm 41 years old and potentially a little bit younger. You grew up, I did not know OJ Simpson as a football player, not old enough to remember him playing for the Buffalo Bills. I grew up with him being everywhere. He was on the sidelines at games. He was, you know, doing news reporting it for different events. He was on the Naked Gun movies. He was an actor. Like, it was just, but he was funny. I mean,
yeah.
I was like, hey, it's OJ. And then all of a sudden he turns into a punchline. And I remember Norm Macdonald on Saturday Night Live on the Weekend Update, just going to town on OJ Simpson every week. It was just something new with OJ, with the trial. And it spawned this, like you said, it was a really good point that I just think of the comedy that came out of it. I'm a huge Dana Carvey fan, and he went to town on all the grandeur of that case and how public it was, and all the I chuckle because I've seen, if you've never seen it, go look up Dana Carvey's HBO special. You can get it on YouTube for free and you'll see all about it. But a lot of these people, these young people, don't know who OJ Simpson was outside of the fact that they've heard about, you know, the gloves and the car chase, the Ford Bronco in 1994. Where were you though when the verdict was announced? Do you remember?
I was in my classroom. I had, it was a fascinating moment because there were no TVs in my classroom at the time. There was no internet hooked up in my classroom. So some of the students had brought in these little kind of handheld radios, and I had two groups of students, one in one corner of the room that were predominantly guys and they were pro OJ, and one in the other corner of the room that were predominantly girls and they were sort of anti OJ. When the verdict was announced, the guys, they celebrated like they won the Super Bowl. I remember we had a big linebacker on our team who went and played at East Carolina, a big dude, physical kid, jumping up and down and running up and down the hallway yelling, "The juice is loose, the juice is loose." And girls literally crying. Wow. They were so upset by it. So I can't think of anything that would captivate our culture the way that that did today.
I was in middle school, not to make you sound old or anything. I was in middle school at the time.
Thanks a lot.
And I remember my teacher turning it on television. We actually had TVs in all the classrooms and turning it on, and everyone just kind of sat there and like stunned, like, what do we do now? Like, how are we supposed to respond to this? You might say like OJ didn't do it. You might say, but it was odd. It was really, really strange. Is it all because it was OJ and people loved OJ Simpson, and then all of a sudden he gets himself into this mess? Is that, do you think, what caused all this stuff?
I think it was really the intersection of fame, race, sex, Hollywood, the you know, burgeoning cable news environment. I mean, all of those. It really was kind of like the perfect storm, and it happened at a time in America where there was this sort of void in large scale news. You know, the Cold War had just ended, right? We were 7 years away, 6 years away from 9/11. We were living in this bubble where the internet was exploding and, you know, the economy was great and it didn't seem like America had any enemies. It just felt like this moment that was ripe for some dramatic national story, and then boom, it landed.
Yeah. That's crazy. All right. We don't want to spend too much time on OJ, but like I always say, rest in peace, OJ Simpson. Whatever your thoughts are on the case are your thoughts. He is no longer with us. So we move on. Let's go to the fact that we are 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. It appears most NFL teams have gone into quote unquote radio silence. You expect any serious news in free agency or related to the draft between now and then? Or do you just think everyone's just kind of bunkering in and preparing?
I think for the most part, they're bunkering in and preparing. I think teams have kind of made the moves that they intend to make up until the draft. And now you sort of get your draft board ready and you see if you can check off the boxes you want to check. And the ones that remain unchecked, now you go back after the draft in that second wave of free agency and you try to replace some holes there. Obviously, the you and I as Steelers fans have some interest in what's going on with Brandon Ayuk, the San Francisco wide receiver. You could see Ayuk move to Pittsburgh or Baltimore, whoever that mystery third team might be. Maybe it's Buffalo, whatever. But, I mean, he might be the one big piece of news that you get before the draft. But for the most part, I think it's going to be pretty quiet.
I think from the trade market, it would have to happen before. Unless you're talking a player-for-player trade, it would have to happen before the draft because you're going to want the capital from that player. So when you think about a Brandon Ayuk and you look at, okay, well, he could stay and he could play this year and then they could lose him in free agency and they would probably acquire a third round compensatory pick. And that's going to be in the next year's draft. So if you want draft capital this year, you're going to have to make a move sooner rather than later. And so as it gets closer to the draft, I feel like the asking price is going to potentially change. We've seen Steelers general manager Omar Khan wait until the witching hour on more than one occasion and get the best deal possible. I'm not so sure if it's going to happen, but I don't see any free agency moves happening between now and the draft. None that are going to move the needle based on the fact that, again, why would an NFL player want to sign with a team before the draft? It would make sense for them as athletes and individual employees to go out and wait. And say, okay, I'm a safety. I'm Justin Simmons, who's still on the market. Guess what? You wanted a safety. You didn't get a safety in the draft. I'm still here. And so now that gives me some leverage. What are your thoughts?
No, I agree completely. That's the move if you're a player. If I go back to Ayuk for a second, I think if you're San Francisco, I don't want to say you have to move him because obviously you don't have to, but it probably benefits you to try to move him right now because you will get a better haul by moving him than you would by allowing him to walk away and get that compensatory pick you mentioned. If you keep him and try to re-sign him, he's going to command, given the current wide receiver market, he's going to command $20 million a year, something maybe even more in that neighborhood. And they've got some obviously top-shelf talent that they have to re-sign. You have to make a decision on George Kittle, who's now hit 30 years old, Christian McCaffrey. Purdy's going to play out his rookie contract fairly soon. I mean, my God, they've got him on a seventh round deal, you know, and he's going to command a top 10 in the NFL quarterback extension when that comes. So they've got some serious decisions to make. I don't know if they can afford Brandon Ayuk. Debo Samuel, I didn't mention him. So if they're going to move him, it would benefit them to move him sooner than later.
Right. So let's go to our next topic. If there were to be pre-draft news, what do you think it is? Is it a trade? Is it a team that moves up in the draft order? Like, what are your thoughts? If there is news, what do you think it'll be?
Well, Ayuk aside, I'm really interested in what the Broncos are doing at quarterback. They don't have a quarterback. I take that back. They have Jared Stidham and they have Ben DiNucci. And if you're confident going into the season as Sean Payton with Jared Stidham and Ben DiNucci, then you have a quarterback. But if you're not and you're looking to acquire one in the draft, you're sitting in a really awkward spot there at 12 overall because I think many people feel as though the top three teams are all going to take quarterbacks. It feels like you're going to see quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3 in the draft. And then the question becomes J.J. McCarthy, who seems to be maybe the fourth guy. If you're Denver, you got Minnesota sitting right in front of you at number 11. You're going to have to get in front of them. Minnesota clearly wants a quarterback. McCarthy, I think, is a great fit for Minnesota. Are the Broncos going to move up to try to jump up in front of Minnesota to try to take that quarterback? I think that's an interesting question. They don't have a second-round pick, so their draft capital is limited. They might either have to unload a bunch of picks in this draft or maybe a future one. But I just feel as though Denver's got to make a move at quarterback, right? Are they really going to start their season with Jared Stidham or maybe after the draft? I don't even know who the best free agent quarterback on the market is. Is it Tannehill? Has he signed anywhere?
He has not yet.
Yeah. Are you going to go with a Stidham Tannehill quarterback room?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I pull up the NFL draft order. For those that don't know, we know Chicago has the number one overall pick. Washington's number two, New England's three. All three of those teams need quarterbacks. You could imagine that the top three guys are going to be gone within those three picks. In which order, we can make assumptions, but we just don't really know. Arizona, I wouldn't say they're in the market for a quarterback. We know the Chargers aren't at five. The Giants, I don't know what they take. Rumor has it that they're not very happy with their quarterback situation. Maybe they take a quarterback. I don't think so. Will Levis in Tennessee at 7. Atlanta just signed Kirk Cousins to a monster deal at 8. 9, Chicago, they're probably going to get their quarterback at 1. New York Jets with Aaron Rodgers, no. Then, like you said, Minnesota at 11 and Denver at 12. This is intriguing. I haven't thought about this until you brought it up. If Denver wants their selection in the fourth best quarterback, assuming that the top three go to the top three picks, they have to move up. The question is, I guess for you, is which do you think that quarterback is? Who do you think that quarterback is? So we'll assume that the top three, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and you'd put Drake May, correct?
Probably. That seems to be the consensus.
The top three, not necessarily in that order, but the top three. So who's the quarterback that they want to go up and get?
Well, I think the big debate is whether or not McCarthy is in that top three. I think McCarthy is the guy that you go up to get. He's clearly, if you expand the list from three to four, McCarthy's clearly in there. A lot of people like him more than they like Drake May or Jaden Daniels. So the interesting question, see, but I think the thing for Denver is this. There's four guys that are within that conversation to be taken in the top 10 or 12. And then there's a big drop. Because then you go into the Bo Nixes and the Michael Penix,
right?
You know, into that, and I don't think anybody feels as though either one of those guys is worth spending the number 12 overall pick in the draft. I mean, maybe Denver will sit there, and you know they'll say, hey, we don't want to mortgage our future to move up just to get ahead of Minnesota to take McCarthy, and they'll take Nix or Penix at 12, and then they're going to get killed for reaching. And you'll see. I don't know. I feel like McCarthy, though, is a great fit for Sean Payton. Those two guys seem, you know, I mean, McCarthy played for Harbaugh for 4 years. If you can play for Harbaugh, you can play for Payton. You know, neither one of those guys are easy guys to play for. And I would think that Denver would be attracted to McCarthy.
A team to keep an eye on here. Now, as I'm looking at the draft order, there's something about this team that makes me think that they could surprise everyone. And everyone's talking Minnesota, Denver, the Las Vegas Raiders at 13. Don't think that they're happy with just Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew as their quarterbacks. They'd love to get one of these quarterbacks. If they traded up, man, would that shock everyone. Yeah. That would totally upset the apple cart. Now all of a sudden, Minnesota and Denver would be scrambling for scraps, which, like you said, some people consider the Penix Juniors and the Bo Nixes of this group to be the scraps. I mean, you Spencer Rattler, like we're not even talking round one. But so that's going to be interesting. And I agree. I guess my question would be, if we see these trade-ups, whether it's Denver, Vegas, whatever, do you think this happens way prior to the draft, or do you think this is a draft day trade?
I don't know. That's such a great question right now. I mean, I would love to know the behind-the-scenes maneuverings. I would think that you would want to wait as long as you could to provide your rival the least amount of time for a counter move.
Yeah.
But when do these things become available, right? I mean, for obviously you have to say, well, which teams in the top 10 are willing to trade out? And that might be a fluid thing. You know, you might be sitting a team sitting at number 8, Atlanta, and they might have their sights set on a receiver, maybe Rome Odunze. And then the Giants take Odunze at number 6. And now if you're Atlanta, you're like, damn, that's the guy we really wanted. All right, so now we'll, you know, start making some phone calls to see if one of those other two teams wants to jump up to number 8. That might happen. That might happen in that really tiny little window where you get 10 minutes to pick. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And sometimes you have seen trades before. Minnesota's already moved up in this draft already this offseason. So they've moved up into 11. It was very strategic in terms of being ahead of Denver and possibly getting the quarterback that they want. It'll be interesting to see if a team like the Raiders might say to someone you just mentioned, like Tennessee at 7. What will it take to get the 7th pick, you know? And what do we have to give up? Do we have to give up our second round pick? Like, what is it? It'll be really captivating. And that's, to me, that's the fun about the NFL draft. Yeah. That's what I love about the NFL draft is that you have these teams that maneuver around and they make the trades up and all this stuff. It's just a lot of fun. And I'm really excited for the actual, we're only 10 days away, actually, of this being recorded. That's going to be a blast. But yeah. Do you see any other trades, I guess, in general prior to the draft, or do you think it's all going to come on that Thursday night?
Yeah, I think that we've probably it's all kind of settled down now, and teams are really setting themselves up for that weekend. And obviously they want to be able to make the right moves once they get there.
All right, let's go to our next topic. Makes me want to vomit, but we're talking Tom Brady. Tom Brady announced on a podcast over the weekend that he wasn't opposed to returning to the NFL at some point next year. On a scale from 1 to 10, How much would you like to see Brady in a football uniform again? Let's say 10 is, I can't wait. Let's get him in one right now. One is, please, Lord, no. Where will you fall on this scale, Coach?
Well, I think you and I are going to be firm in agreement on this one. Let's go with a zero. Let's go with a zero.
Could we go negative numbers here? Right?
But here's an interesting sort of twist on that question, right? While you and I have no enthusiasm for a Tom Brady return,
right?
And I don't know what the public opinion in general is on wanting Brady back. You know, there's a saturation point with everything. I can't imagine there's a lot of fans clamoring for what 47-year-old Tom Brady to come back. But here's an interesting question. We just talked about all these teams who are quarterback needy and who might be left out. I would be willing to bet that one of those teams, if Tom Brady was serious about coming back, one of those teams would find him a better option than some of the scrap heaps in free agency or lower level prospects in the draft.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
No, you're right. I mean, he's 46 years old. I think he'll be 47 this year. And my gosh, I mean, he's still in great shape. I'm not saying that he couldn't do it. On a scale from how much do I want to see him in a uniform again? I don't want to see that guy in a uniform ever again. Like, please, like, that guy tortured the Steelers long enough. And, you know, some people say, like, I don't even know where he would go. I mean, it would have to be a team like Denver if they don't get a quarterback. But would you want to go to Denver? Like, would he want to play in Denver for Sean Payton? I don't know.
Yeah, because that's the thing. If you're Brady, your options are limited to teams that are probably not going to be very good. And so, yeah, there aren't any contenders that are like, oh, the thing that's going to put us over the top is 47-year-old Tom Brady. So it's Denver. And maybe, I don't know, is it Vegas? Tom Brady could be a part owner.
I was going to say, let's throw in this caveat here that he is still there. It's not official yet, but he is trying to become a part minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't know if the NFL, because they've never been in this situation before, would they allow a part owner of a team to potentially play in the NFL or for that team?
Oh, yeah, this is great. In Vegas, of all places, it's sort of like the confluence all of these complicated. The greatest scandal of all time would be Tom Brady comes back as the quarterback for the team that he partially owns, and then gets ensnared in a gambling a scandal where he's betting on his own team. I mean, my God, when you're Tom Brady, you've got so much money and you've had all the success in the world. God, for guys like that, the gambling is sometimes a lure, and I'm not saying that Tom Brady's going to be caught up in it. But you look at Michael Jordan, you look at Shohei Ohtani, who wasn't gambling. And you've got what am I going to do with all this time and money I've got? Oh, let's gamble. Or if you're Tom Brady, oh, let's come back and play a little bit more.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll see. I hope it doesn't come to anything. I hope that we just move on with our lives, and Tom Brady's not a part of that. That would be great. All right, let's go with the fifth topic here. Let's go with another big picture question. Over 80,000 fans attended the Ohio State Buckeyes spring game last week. That's 80,000 fans for an inter-squad scrimmage or an exhibition game. No other sport in America can create that type of interest. What has football done right that has made it far and away America's most favorite sport? So baseball might be the pastime, but it's not the favorite sport of the country. That is football. What are your thoughts on this, Coach?
That was mind-boggling. And to add to how absurd it was, I watched some of it. I watched some of that spring game. I was texting you guys because I was watching the United Football League on Sunday, the San Antonio Brahmins against the St. Louis Battlehawks. I even know the names of the teams. That's how great football is, or that's what an amazing job football is doing to captivate the American public. They've got us watching football games while the Masters was on, and while the NBA playoffs are about to get going, and baseball.
I was not watching the UFL. I was watching a very amazing final round of the Masters. Like, I did not even turn it on.
Yeah, so you seem offended that I even mentioned that I was watching football. Actually,
final round of the Masters, man. Scottie Scheffler, I guess, a big name guy. Anyways, I don't want to get into golf.
I think what football is doing exceptionally well is that they have created this intrigue throughout the calendar, 365 days. Here we are talking about the NFL draft, the greatest non-sporting event on the calendar. I mean, the NFL and football in general has grown the game into a year-round and soon to be global venture. It's really just it starts very young. Flag football has been wonderful at recruiting people to the sport that may be a little bit leery of the contact early on. The college football remains the most successful minor league, so to speak, in any sport. I mean, you don't hear, you know, college basketball has become a one and done thing. The minor league baseball, nobody can name five minor league prospects unless you are a devotee of the sport, et cetera. But yet, you know, college football, there goes 80, that's the minor leagues. And there's 80,000 fans in April in Columbus, Ohio. So I think that just the big picture plan about how to grow that sport has been well executed.
I think that we cannot underscore the importance of gambling on this, in my opinion. And I think that a lot of people in a lot of states that, you know, you are in New Jersey, my buddy Pez, our buddy Pez from Pez's Picks, the dude grew up in Atlantic City. I did not. I could not gamble unless you wanted to do it illegally and you had to find somebody and it was a bookie, it was behind closed doors and all that stuff. Now it's accessible on everyone's phone, except for like five states in the United States that still haven't legalized gambling in that state on sports. So if anything, I think that football is the best sport to gamble on because there's only one game a week and there's a lot of prep and you get to learn a lot and you get to look at injury reports and all that stuff. We're going through that at Pez's Picks right now as we're getting ready to dive into baseball and basketball and hockey and stuff. But I think also gambling has brought people that maybe were kind of on the fence into the mix. Now they're interested and now they're involved and now they want to see what's happening. And maybe they signed a deal with the devil, so to speak, in terms of this gambling and having official gambling sponsors of the National Football League. And I put my tinfoil hat on many times during the season and say, this is really, really fishy. But I think that gambling has a bigger impact on the popularity of the game than a lot of people let on. This is fantasy football times 10, in my opinion. So when fantasy football was real popular, everyone was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to start following these teams. I'm going to follow these players. Now it's to the umpteenth degree, in my opinion. I don't know. You may disagree.
No, I agree. And it goes in sort of coordination with the fantasy football impact. Mm-hmm. I think about Pez's wife, Michelle. She's a huge football fan, predominantly because she loves fantasy football and gambling. Yeah. The game of football itself, she doesn't mind it, but without those other two elements, she wouldn't be attracted to it on her own. My wife, I mean, she's a coach's wife, you know, so she's been around the game for a long, long time. She loves football, is passionate about football. I think there are a lot of people, like you said, who picture like the Super Bowl when you run a little block pool at your house, or you just do one of those prop bet sheets. How into it are so many of the people? I mean, they got so into it because of the sideshow. It's a tremendous sideshow.
It is. And then you throw into the fact like these colleges and the NIL money and the transfer portal being its own version of free agency. Now, all of a sudden, these fan bases aren't looking at, oh, man, what, we've had some horrible recruiting classes. We're going to be awful for the next 8 years. Now you can turn it around like that. You get a couple guys to transfer to your school, and next thing you know, you've put together a team that can win a national title. Guys are staying in college longer because of the NIL money. It's all intertwined, in my opinion. And it just is funny that it is all intertwined with money.
A guy, young man who plays in our area, Millville High School, that just keeps churning out amazing athletes. That's Mike Trout's alma mater. But young man named Lotzier Brooks, wide receiver, who has tortured us for 3 years in a row. And thankfully, we will not be playing him this coming year. This will be his senior year. He just announced over the weekend on Twitter that he's committing to Alabama. I mean, that's the level at which Lotzier Brooks is going to play. The very first comment on, you know, in all the comments after he posted was, time to get that NIL money. That's where people are, man. That's where the game is for a lot of people. The money, the intrigue, the other stuff that comes with it is the driver.
That's right. I got to ask you, how was the UFL product? Because like I said, I didn't watch a second of it. Is it interesting? Is it intriguing?
Good. It's good. I mean, AJ McCarron was one of the quarterbacks. I mean, there's a guy, you know, spent a decent amount of time in the NFL, and it's not an overly polished product, and there's a lot of names obviously people won't know, but I wouldn't say it's bad football. It's much better football being played on a much higher level than, you know, watching a lot of college games. So if you're a junkie, I mean, most people are not going to tune in, but I'm addicted. So
you're addicted. That's fine. All right, let's finish this up with a very interesting player profile. Someone that I have actually done a little bit of homework on because I find his story intriguing, and that's Andrew Luck. Yes, former Stanford quarterback, top overall pick to the Indianapolis Colts, who just stepped away from the game. What's your thoughts on Andrew Luck?
Fascinating guy. He's back in the news because he was back in Indianapolis this weekend for a fundraiser, the Chuck Strong Foundation, which was founded after his former coach, Chuck Pagano, was diagnosed with leukemia. And, you know, Andrew Luck has been off the grid for a while since he stepped away from the game in 2019. And he gave some really interesting interviews about, like, just what he's been going through the past 4 or 5 years. And it's a kind of a fascinating story, right? 29 years old, at the top of his game, steps away because he said that football just, it wasn't fun. It was mentally, damaging, physically damaging. He felt beat up. And he just kind of stepped away and disappeared. And he did so a few weeks before the season opener. I think it was August of 2019 when he announced his retirement. And his story is interesting, man. He went to Spain. You know, he learned how to cook. He learned how to surf. He took skiing lessons and snowboarding lessons, and I guess he's back at Stanford taking classes now and being a stay-at-home dad. Very interesting stuff. And he seems at peace with his decision, but he also seems like a guy who really went through a mental and emotional struggle for a while there. And I find him fascinating.
I think that was a story. It might have been on ESPN.com. It was an article. Someone actually got him to sit down and tell a story. This was a couple of years ago. And he talked about how he had this shoulder injury, and he couldn't even lift his arm up. And he had to go to, I want to say it was Sweden, somewhere like that. They did a procedure over there. He started working with someone about how to throw again and how to get that shoulder to be able to properly move. And between he and his wife, they went through this gambit of emotions on, why am I doing this? Like, what am I doing to myself? He was putting himself through a mental torture. And while some people love it, he did not. And he just said, you know what? I'm done. I just can't do this anymore. I can't do it mentally. He felt like he was just constantly, you know, just being beaten up figuratively and literally, emotionally and physically. And so he stepped away. I think he did go back to Stanford. I think he was getting his master's degree. He told the story about how he's being on campus with all these college kids. And some people were doing double takes, like, is that Andrew Luck? Yep. And he's riding his bike around campus and stuff. He seems like a really down-to-earth guy. And he wasn't in love with the game. Like you said, you're a junkie. He was not a junkie. He was to one point. And then he said, I just can't do this anymore. And so he stepped away. It sounds very similar in a way to what Barry Sanders did when he just said, I'm done. And I'm just not going to do it anymore.
Yeah. And it shocks us sometimes when these guys step away before we think they're finished. Mm-hmm. But because the much more common story is to hang on way too long.
Right.
And is for us to say, yeah, that guy should have stepped away 2-3 years ago. Because we just assume that with all the money and the fame and you know, you've reached the pinnacle of your profession, that you would want to do it for as long as you can. And obviously we don't get to experience the hardships of the sport.
It's rough. It's not for the faint of heart. And, you know, like I said, I don't blame anyone for if he has it. He's clearly stepped away. He didn't regret his decision. So good for him. You know, it's better than him sticking around. And you look at some of these players that can't even walk up and down steps anymore. And he's not going to experience that. So, hey, good for him. Andrew Luck is an interesting case study. I know a lot of people feel very, very strongly about him and his decisions that he made. But it is what it is. Kudos to him. So, Coach, what do you have coming up on the call sheet this week?
Yeah, obviously ramping up our draft coverage. We're going to take a little dive on the history of the draft from a positional standpoint and look at, like, what have been the most successful positions to be drafted. You and I were talking on the show the last couple of weeks about top 10 quarterbacks and the struggle that they've had in the league. So what are the most reliable position groups historically? And who are some of the players that you might want to target in this year's draft?
There you go. Can't wait to hear that. It's always a good show. The call sheet, you can hear it right here on the FFSN NFL podcast feed. In the meantime, Coach, where can they find you on social media?
Yep, at KT Smith FFSN on our SCN and FFSN YouTube channels. Got a video breakdown of Iowa corner Cooper DeJean coming out today.
Nice. Awesome. So be on the lookout for that. If you want to hear our Steelers coverage, you can find us at Steel Curtain Network, anywhere you get your podcast by searching Steel Curtain Network or just Steelers, you'll find us. You can find me on social media at jhartman, H-A-R-T-M-A-N _PIT. That's it. We'll see you next week on another NFL Whip Around. Thanks again, Coach. Take it easy.